Welcome to Wheeling Free, a show without barriers. This show is produced and presented by disabled people each week. Hi, this is Ian Young. Welcome to another show. Today we have an interview and a forum on today's show. And to get the show underway, it's a good afternoon, Joe Reeves.
Thanks, Ian. Hello, listeners. One of our aims in our show is to try and involve more and more people in the show, taking part in it. So we're beginning to have two different teams that will be operating alternately. And today with me in the interview is Norm Pine.
Good afternoon, listeners. Good afternoon, Joe.
And somebody new to us, Joan Hume.
Good afternoon, listeners.
Joan, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
I am a quadriplegic who returned to teaching after a car accident 9 years ago. I edit and write for the magazine Quadrangle, which is the official journal of the Australian Quadriplegic Association, and I belong to various organisations and groups serving the interests of the handicapped.
Thanks, Joan. Our guest today is Pat Quinboas. Welcome, Pat.
Thanks very much.
Now, Pat, you are the newly appointed executive officer of the Union for Handicapped Persons.
The Union of Handicapped People is quite a difference.
Right. Now, this was recently formed. How did this come about?
Earlier this year, I think it was about March, a group of handicapped people, only about five or six of us, got together with the aim of putting on a conference which would encourage handicapped people to speak on the sorts of issues that involve them particularly. And from this conference, which is the most successful one in May the 17th, we formed an executive committee, and now, thanks to the good offices of the Department of Youth and Community Services, we were able to form a secretariat which will pursue the aims that we see as essential.
Well, Pat, you know, traditionally we're used to the role of unions which are found in the industrial area. This is obviously very different to that. Would you like to explain a little of the aims of that, the union?
I think union, in its original sense, is getting people together, a unity of people. And I think one of the things that worries handicapped people is that they're so conscious of their own weakness. But it's quite true that when a group of people get together, that their strengths that they have reinforce each other. And we're hoping, by using this term union, that handicapped people will see this as a chance to get together and combine, and through this combined strength, achieve some of their aims.
Can you tell us something about your role in this union, Pat?
It's a little difficult to do that.
In this union, Pat?
It's a little difficult to do that with any certainty because, for one thing, I don't take up the position until January, and because it's such a new association of handicapped people, I think it'll probably change in character. But there are two things, initially anyway, that I see that I can do to help. One is to help organise the structure of the union, to let people know that there are many handicapped people who are available to be consultants, to be speakers, to give information, to represent handicapped people at conferences and seminars. I think that with RMIDP coming next year, so many people are now saying you should have more disabled people on committees, you should have more disabled people speaking. Well, I hope through our union that we can form that central organising power. But the second function that I think I might have is to get around New South Wales as much as I can, and of course Sydney, where so many handicapped people live, and find out some of the hazards that they see in preventing their self-development, in impeding their rehabilitation. Finding out what I can, coming back to Sydney, seeing how I can help, seeing how their needs fit into the general picture, and then getting back to those country people and those metropolitan area groups as much as I can to tell them what's going on. I want to be a facilitator, a coordinator, a news person, a carrier pigeon perhaps, I don't know.
How will people be able to contact you?
We're hoping that the conference that we have on February the 28th next year will attract many hundreds of handicapped people. By that time, we will be quite sure where we'll be located. But at present, we do have a box number, post office box number 41 at St. Peter's, and information can be gained by letter. But in February the 28th, we'll let people know more about that. We'll have telephone numbers available as well as postal addresses. But I think the main thing I would like people in the country areas to get used to is the idea that I'll be getting around there every 3 months. Every quarter, I'll definitely be there again. So if there are things that they like to bring to my attention or queries that they'd like answered, they can be guaranteed that I'll be back again.
It's an enormous undertaking, isn't it? Because, you know, when you think of it, disabled people, they're just really not used to talking out, speaking out about their problems particularly, are they? So in a sense, you're reaching them first before they start beginning to realise that you're there, and then they in turn start to reach out. So I see that you're going to be doing the initial sort of stepping out first for them.
I think that it's a fortunate chance, though, that this union should be formed just before the International Year of the Disabled Person, because there are so many committees already being formed throughout New South Wales that are promoting opportunities for handicapped people to speak. And I'm really not doing anything alone in that sense. And another thing I think we should think about, just since that conference in May, so many handicapped people. I think we have a core group now of about 20 or 25 people that we can call on at any time, who can be articulate, who are brave enough to speak out, who may not have been brave enough last year. But we give each other confidence, and I think that's the feature of already of the growth of this union of handicapped people.
You're listening to Willing Free. We'll take a break and we'll be back shortly.
Thank you.
dull O there and can't get it out of my head. You're listening to Willing Free. It's back to you, Joe.
Norm, I think you want to ask a question.
Yes. Pat, what sort of positive feedback have you had from disabled people about this newly formed union?
I think mostly people are very excited at this opportunity that we have ahead of us to do something for ourselves. You know, a lot said about increasing the self-respect and the dignity of handicapped people, but I think perhaps one of the best ways we can do it is discover our own strengths. We talk about disabled people all the time, we're able people as well, and now we've got a chance to prove it. But I've never heard, I think you used the right term, it's been positive feedback. I've never heard any comment that this was a waste of time or a waste of effort.
Actually, one criticism of the union that I've heard is that the union has been given quite substantial government grants to establish your position, even though it has not been in existence for very long, while other self-help groups have been struggling in the community for years without the same immediate patronage and recognition. How do you account for this?
I think that one of the things that makes us different is that we're a union of handicapped people rather than a coalition of various groups which have specific aims. I think that we have impressed the funding committee with our eagerness, and we've also convinced them that we have support in the community of handicapped people of all sorts, ones who don't belong to organisations, ones that do. It was an extraordinary thing at that May conference to see so many different faces. I don't know if some of the people listening have this sort of experience, but if you go to a conference or a seminar, you know, you see the same people every time. But for the first time at this conference, we saw a couple of hundred people that weren't familiar to the core of us who've been working in this area for a while.
One of the interesting things about that, I think, is that you've got so many disabled people coming together and having to look at other disabled persons' disabilities, and I think that that compels them to enlarge their own sort of borders, looking at other persons' disabilities. Do you find that was very much so, Pat?
I'm speaking in a personal sense here because I'm talking about other deaf people. They're the ones that I've been mixing with mainly. But one deaf friend of mine came to the conference and for the first time was introduced to somebody in a wheelchair, and found tremendous pleasure in having a good old whinge session with this person to find out the things that hassled her and what hassled Claire herself. And by the time the day was over, each of them felt rather grateful that they didn't have the problems that the other person had to face.
Yeah.
And so this was a positive outcome of sharing information about disabilities.
Yeah. What we haven't brought out for the listeners, people that don't know you, Pat, is the fact that you are have a hearing problem.
Yes, that's only one of them, actually. All the others aren't quite so visible. Not that my hearing problem is very visible, although I have a monstrous great hearing aid at present, which is helping me in this interview. But I do have impaired vision as well. I only have vision in one eye, and I'm a bit shaky on my pins. I had meningitis 3 years ago, and everything all happened at once. So in a way, I'm very different from some people that have been making adjustments all their lives to being different from other people.
What is the best way for a person who's not familiar with deafness to communicate with a deaf person?
Perhaps an understanding that most people have some hearing, and a hearing aid does help to a large extent, but it doesn't act as a perfect microphone, that we depend very, very largely on the visual cues that we get. So speaking deliberately, articulating, shaping the words well, facing me when you're speaking to me, trying to cut out background noise as much as possible so I can use that little bit of hearing that I have got. These help, and remember, a bit of paper is the most useful aid that I can have. I shove it over to you or you shove it to me. Just the odd word written on it will make sense of what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, we seem to be a raggedy group here, but we seem to get by, don't we? Pat, the membership of the union, what sort of people actually can be members?
anybody who sees himself or herself as having a disability. We've even been considering the possibility of emotional disabilities as being a qualifying factor. But if there has been any physical, sensory or intellectual handicap that has been made evident in the past or in the at present, join us by all means.
What about parents of disabled children, though? Does the union not recognise that they should have a voice in the union?
I think we will eventually, and I think that these people will benefit from very greatly from the work that we will be doing. But the prime objective of our getting together is to advance opportunities for our own rehabilitation, to build up our own confidence. We're working for ourselves to start with. And then I think as we grow, and as we grow in confidence and we grow in numbers, I think then we should expand our membership to include associate membership, particularly parents of handicapped people.
Mm.
Now, the lower age limit is 16. Do you envisage a time when children under the age of 16 will be allowed to join?
I think this is a point that's been discussed quite largely amongst the committee, actually. I think as children become more articulate, as they're more conscious of their rights, as school curricula change, I think it would be very hard for us to say, no, you can't have a voice in our union. But at present, we're limiting it to people who are 16 and over, who can follow that prime aim that I have mentioned, self-rehabilitation. They can do it on their own.
Just one point on the membership, Pat. Roughly how many members do you have at the present time?
I can't give you an accurate answer, I'm afraid, Norman. We probably have about 250, I think, at present. But it's sort of at this particular point. On February the 28th, we hope to have about 1,500 by February the 28th. We're sending out many, many application forms with accounts of the points that were made at the May conference and an account of report of what we have done since. And people will be getting these in the mail now. And in fact, if they want any more, they can write, and may I correct that postbox number, please? We used that last number for the conference, but our new number is Post Office Box 81, St. Peter's. And a query there will send you as many application forms as you want, and in fact probably far more than you do want. Please spread them around. The more people we have, the stronger we can be, and it's only $2 to join.
Right. One last question, Pat. I believe you haven't got any premises at this stage. What are you hopeful about in that area?
We're tremendously concerned about this, but until I have full time to devote to the task, I just don't see what I can do. Several of us are phoning and visiting, but you see, we need premises that are accessible in two senses. First of all, accessible to public transport so we're reachable, and secondly, of course, accessible so that people who have difficulties in getting around can freely visit us. But we don't have very much money. We've had a good grant, yes, but it's not nearly enough for getting good premises to start with and paying the salary of the people that we need for the secretariat. We do have to prove ourselves more specifically, I think, as an organisation. But if anyone does know of any premises that might be available, might be suitable, we just want a place to put a telephone and a couple of bodies and have a postal address, and we can then get on with planning this February conference, which should be a real beauty.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for coming in, and we certainly wish you very well in your new role and the union.
Thanks very much.
The anti-discrimination legislation for physically handicapped people has been introduced into Parliament, but it has been postponed until February. We here at Whirling Free are concerned that disabled in the community are not fully aware of the importance of this legislation relative to their lives. We felt that everybody here today should spend a few minutes discussing it. Joan?
Well, I think it's important that people realise what the anti-discrimination legislation means in terms of, you know, what they can, what handicapped people can complain about. Now, the Act prohibits, or will, when it is implemented, prohibits discrimination on the grounds of physical handicap in employment, education, accommodation, and the provision of goods and services. Now, Cabinet has approved this, but because of its postponement until next February.
Next February, isn't it?
I feel that.
Yes, I really think that the disabled people have really got to look at it in relationship to their lives, because unless we put pressure on the community and the government at large, it could get swept aside again.
It seems ironical, doesn't it, with IYDP and all the fuss and bother and all the committees, that this is the time when we might be heralding non-passing of this legislation. Yes, I do think this is the time for individual handicapped people to have something to say, as well as the groups. It's vital to our future.
Yeah, it's incredible some of the stories that come to us. I may say one simple example of a paraplegic living in he's renting a home unit, a block of strata units, and the board on that building have told him that unless he stops having his friends who are coming into the building in wheelchairs, stopping them from coming in, well, they're going to sort of terminate his lease, because they said they don't want the place turned into a nursing home. And we're just getting so many stories like this coming forward. But people are not putting those into the relevant areas. And I think that this is terribly important.
Perhaps this can be the beginning of an appeal to disabled people who have been discriminated against in any of the areas that Joan has talked about, to send in, to record these particular incidences. Perhaps we should collect a dossier.
It's important that people do that, because even once the legislation is passed, it won't have any impact on the way things are done in the community until people make challenges on the basis of the legislation that's laid down. The law enforcement agencies won't take any action against somebody who's discriminating until a complaint is lodged by the person who has been discriminated against, and then it's possible to bring it before the courts and take action against that person. So if people start now registering their complaints, when the legislation is passed, it will be possible to act on them, and the changes that the legislation can bring will happen that much quicker.
The way you register a complaint is to ring or write to the office of the Counsellor for Equal Opportunity, and her or her officers will consider the complaint on whatever merit it has, and then a representation will be made to the employer or the person in running a hostel or accommodation. And if the complaint cannot be solved on a person-to-person basis, the complaint is then referred to the Anti-Discrimination Board, which has the powers of an independent court. And if the particular person against whom the complaint has been made does not come to the party, so to speak, he or she may then be fined. And of course, some of the fines are quite hefty. So we urge all handicapped people then who've been discriminated against in any way, particularly in employment, because after all, it's employment where it's really important that that equal opportunity be given to handicapped people in that regard, and of course in education, that they put pen to paper and write to the Council of Equal Opportunity.
Is this the council that's located in Kager House?
Yes.
In Bent Street, in Sydney, and it's on the same floor as the Anti-Discrimination Board, isn't it? And so that's Alison Ziller, is she the councillor?
The Councillor for Equal Opportunity is Carmel Nyland, and
Penny Nelson is particularly one that's good in the Anti-Discrimination Board to write to.
Right, so two names to remember, Carmel Nyland and Penny Nelson.
Yes. And I think people should be writing to the newspapers to put forward their feelings and that. I think we should be showing these things more and more on a public level. I think it's terribly important.
We all know the impact, of course, that anti-discrimination legislation has had on the women's movement. This has been reflected, of course, in the statistics of women that are flooding the workforce, and with the result also in tandem with this, of course, is the decline, particularly in Western societies, in the birth rate. Well, if this can have such a monumental impact on women and women in employment, surely the same kind of impact can be felt, you know, on disabled people too, that once discrimination legislation works in their favour, we can see equal opportunities really enacted for the first time.
I mean, so we're talking, you know, they're talking about next year, about the changing of attitudes, and this is one real change that would bring about the changing attitudes, not because everybody would rush out and suddenly sue everybody, but suddenly the community as a whole would begin to look at its actions a little more closely. I think it's just something that just brings that about. That's what happened in America, apparently, along those lines.
I'm afraid our time's up, Joe. You've been listening to Wheeling Free, and we'll be back at the same time next Sunday at 5 o'clock.
Just sitting and watching TV, seeing things we could never afford.